Primary Reaction Chamber.
Where Copper Raymond goes on one.
Time.
Initial reaction at T-minus 30.
Fuel slug in place.
Stand by for injection.
Capsule breach now.
Reaction commencing.
Containment field hold to 3.14 meters of time. Initial dampers flushing to capacity.
Can we hold it?
What's happening?
Critical mass.
Hold on!
Mind spike!
You're listening to Critical Mass Podcast. I'm your host, Winston Crutchfield. There's really only one thing on the docket today. I promised to look back at Rand Thanagar Holy War, so we're going to take a brief glimpse at that. I promise not to rave and run rampant about the mess that was Final Crisis, but only a brief mention. I do plan to make a few choice comments about the state of comic books today, what I am and am not reading, and what I will and will not continue to be reading. So that's kind of where we are, that's kind of what's going on. Got a few announcements, but first let's do this.
Water. We drink it. We bathe in it. We wash our clothes in it. We need it to grow crops. We take it for granted, yet for 1.1 billion people in the world, clean water is a luxury. Unclean water threatens the lives of billions of people every day, but most of us listening to this don't know what life without clean water would be like. Something as simple as a public water fountain is an oddity to many people. We buy clean water in a bottle for $1, and that same dollar could give a person clean water for an entire year. I'm John Wilkerson, host of the Jesus Geek Podcast. Will you join me in raising funds to provide clean water to people who desperately need it? Please visit water.jesusgeek.info for more information on how you can change someone's life with just $1 a day. That's water.jesusgeek.info. Give water and give life.
That's John Wilkerson. He's podcasting for water, digging a well for Living Water International. $15,000, 1 year. Come on, folks, if we all pitch in, we can do this together, bring clean water to someone who needs it. All right, what else is coming up? Fear the Con 2. I'm hyped. I'm pumped. I'm really, really excited about Fear the Con 2. First weekend in March. That's hosted by the guys over at feartheboot.com. And if I could find a promo for them, I'd play it here. But since I can't, I won't. That's a weekend worth of gaming, Friday, Saturday. And then on Sunday, we're going to see the premiere of Watchmen in the theater, something I loathe doing, going to the theater. But you know what? For Watchmen, as for The Dark Knight, I'll make an exception. Also premiering, world premiere, grand premiere, official premiere, I don't know. Premiering at Fear the Con 2 is Atomic Earth, the board game. And if you're there, you'll get a chance to get your hands on the first releases of the Atomic Earth board game, and a chance to play in the demo, as well as a D20 role-playing campaign that I'm running the night before, just to make sure that people are a little extra excited about that. Atomic Earth, I know you haven't heard a whole lot about, but it's a board game set in the far future where a cataclysm has split the moon in half and released from the center of the Earth all of the giant atomic monsters that live there, mutated further, of course, by the unnatural atomic radiations of the world above. Your job, you are a wilderness scout. You live in Challenger City in the middle of North America. You need to go out into the wilderness of North America, brave the dangers that lurk there, track down these giant atomic monsters and incite them to war against each other. This is the only way that you can use your TAC device to gather the essential quantum energy needed to fuel your city. Gather these shards of energy, race back home, and be the first one there to win awards and acclaim and the lifelong accolades. But be warned, this is a dangerous proposition. Only 1 in 6 wilderness scouts ever return home. Anyway, that's the script for the board game. I'm really excited about that. And after Fear the Con 2, you will be able to see and learn more about that on the website. There will be some background material and copies of the game for sale. So, yeah, I'm pumped. I'm hyped. I'm really, really excited. Ooh, take a breather. Okay. Well, this week I had an opportunity to catch the Snarky Avenger online. We chatted for a bit over Skype. We were going to do a comment about the Underworld series that didn't work out exactly as it planned. But let me give you a flavor of just how that conversation went, shall I?
Hello.
Mic check. 1-1-2.
You sound fine. There's still a echo back there. I did an echo call, and it was fine on my end.
I don't know. You're breaking up quite a bit more than you were at the beginning.
How about now?
Wow, now it's worse.
How about now?
It's a little better.
I can. It's like. I mean, I can hear it. It's almost like there's a speaker feeding back into your microphone or something. Yeah, I'm getting some noise, too, but...
That's probably me fiddling with the microphone, I would imagine.
No, it's more static-type noise.
Well, I can change my setup real quick.
Well, if you want to try, I mean, we are podcasting professionals.
That's right! Yeah, you get car crashes there at the end because I couldn't find my train wreck sound effect. But hey, we're going to get together again next week and might have something interesting for you if we can if we can get our equipment working, both of our equipment's working right at the same time. Hey, what do you expect from a pair of podcasting professionals? But you know what? That doesn't do Snarky justice, so check this out.
Snark. Infested Waters.
Snark Infested Waters is a podcast about the horror of it all. Life, faith, art, fandom, etc. Hosted by me, Taylor Kent. The show includes ranting, shouting, and or uncivil discourse on the subjects of faith, politics, art, books, movies, fandom, and more. It also includes cool music, interviews, and uncivilized reviews of the latest movies to debut on the Sci-Fi Channel's most disappointing, I mean dangerous, night of television. So if you like cool music, interviews, and rants of epic proportion, come join the fun at thesnarkyavenger.com.
Dr. Malkin, look out!
TheSnarkyAvenger.com.
Got one more thing before we head on into the comic book rant. Peter Franzen from Spirit Blade Productions has promised me a conversation about Green Lantern and Dark Ritual and all the goodness happening over in the Spirit Blade Underground and the Underground Liberation. And goober that I am, I'm just now getting around to taking him up on it. So that's just a little something for you to anticipate for next week. In the meantime, head on over to spiritblade.net, take a peek inside Pater's brain, and if you're the creative type, and I'm sure you are, see about joining the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance, which is a really cool little creative thing he's got going on for fans of Spirit Blade. You know, one more time, this doesn't do Pater any justice. Why are you listening to me talk?
This is Peter Franzen from Spirit Blade Productions. If you're one of those misfit Christians that likes sci-fi, fantasy, and comic books, then we want you to hang out with us every week at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. Get your news, reviews, and rumors on cool movies and comic books, and send us your own reviews and thoughts to play on the air and let your inner geek shine. We're also diving deep and exploring God's Word without suits, pews, or churchy language. So if you're an out-of-the-box thinker, you've got a new home at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. Find us on iTunes or go to pater.libsyn.com. That's PAETER.LIBSYN.com. See you there, and in all things, seek the truth.
Alrighty then. I am holding in my hot little hands a month's worth of comic books, more or less. And we're just going to take a peek right here about what I have been reading and what it looks like I'm going to continue to read. First of all, we promised an update on Rand Thanagar, Holy War. So I want to lead off with that. That was an 8-issue miniseries by Jim Starlin and Ron Lim. Great writing team, great writing and art team. I really enjoy both of their works, and things in Rand Thanagar Holy War didn't quite work out the way I expected. The main villain was Sinar the Demiurge, who is God's architect, the architect of creation, who was used by God to create the world. To create, in fact, the entire universe. Now, this is a Gnostic concept, dates all the way back to Plato, and probably even before that, but Plato's the one who really who coined the phrase, the Demiurge. One of the things that I really noticed about this story was that it was easy to tell which characters were there by editorial mandate and which ones were there by, shall we say, writer's fiat. Jim Starlin has a habit of letting no character go unchanged, no character escape unscathed, and no character grow undeveloped. So when I see characters that are introduced in his stories but are not being used in any significant way, it tells me that this is really probably not Jim Starlin's decision to put these here, but probably somebody a little higher up the chain says these characters sell well together. And I'm talking, of course, about the presence of Starfire and Animal Man and even Bizarro in the book, because the core of this book really didn't revolve around any of that. I'm going to go ahead and throw Hawkman in there as well, although that could have been Starlin's nod to the Adam Strange Hawkman team ups in Showcase in the 70s. And of course, it makes good sense for Hawkman to be there. After all, Thanagar is his homeworld. Or homeworld-ish. I'm not certain exactly which incarnation of Hawkman we're in. Regardless, this story focused on Adam Strange and Captain Comet, and to a lesser degree, Starman. These three characters were really the core of the story, and they're the ones that Starlin focused his attention on the most. And which is as good, as these characters are going to be featured in the upcoming, I think it's still called Strange Adventures, continuing the story of Ran and Thanagar and the Church of Eternal Light, the whole setup that he had going on there. But I digress. The actual plot of Holy War revolved around the coming of Sinar, the Demiurge, the being that is worshipped by the Church of Eternal Light, and the conflict between Sinar and Lady Styx, a death goddess that was featured in 52 and then again in Countdown to Adventure. She's not really a goddess, she's just a cosmic being of incredible power, who, with deific delusions, shall we say. The conflict revolved around these two cults, the one, the Church of Eternal Light, having established its beachhead on Thanagar, and the cult of Lady Styx having established its beachhead on Ran. The conflict, there was a lot of explosions, a lot of plans that failed, and when things finally drew to a close, I was surprised to find out that this story really wasn't about people doing heroic deeds, but seemed to be much more about torturing the main characters, as both Adam Strange and Starman suffered significant personal losses without any heroic deeds to back those up. Captain Comet, on the other hand, remained true to form, true to the new incarnation anyway, as the cosmic mercenary between the two, And it'll be interesting to see how that character develops in the future. I'm confess now to being a sucker to the hard-bitten mercenary with the heart of gold, which isn't quite the tack they're taking with Comet, but it's really close enough. Plus, he is one of the few genuine psychic powers in the DC universe, so I'm curious to see where they're going with that. I keep drifting away from the crux of the story, don't I? That's not good. So, as these mortals stand by, helplessly enacting failed plan after failed plan, everything begins to unfold exactly as the Demiurge has foreseen that it will, or perhaps has put into motion. There were a couple of one-shots that suggest that Sinar himself has orchestrated all of this, and he says as much in the story, that this incarnation of himself is but a step towards his greater glory. So this really isn't about the driving action in the story isn't about mortal ability, but mortal futility in the face of God, in the face of deific manipulation, as everything around them is being manipulated either by Sinar or destroyed by Lady Styx. And not surprisingly for Jim Starlin's story, where his godlike beings self-destruct, Sinar goes down in a blaze of glory, stating all the while that this is only part of his plan towards greater power, and he takes Lady Styx with him. Significantly, he does not do this in a suicide gambit, but rather his preordained destruction, his own death, which he not only foresaw but orchestrated, hinged upon the free will and independent decisions that were made by the mortal characters. And I found that to be really, really fascinating, especially as a commentary on Christian theology. I'm not really going to dwell on it because the story itself doesn't dwell on it. It simply uses it as a story element to add depth to the plot. Anyway, Ranthanagar Holy War ought to be out in trade paperback before the end of the summer, and I really recommend it. It did not tie into Final Crisis at all, for which I was disappointed, and this is why I've waited so long. I was waiting for Final Crisis to wrap up and see if Holy War was featured in there at all. But it's not, so oh well. I'm going to take a short break, and we're gonna come back. We're going to talk for a bit about Final Crisis and the direction of DC, what books I'm reading, and what books I'm stopping.
What happens when a pumpkin carving, trick-or-treating, late-night monster movie-watching monster fan becomes a Christian? Is Halloween now off-limits? Is the whole thing pagan, occult, satanic? Is a love for spooky things and gothic detail just plain sick? Lint Hatcher doesn't take such questions lightly. In the Magic 8-Ball test, Hatcher grits his teeth and runs full tilt through the anti-Halloween gauntlet, putting his mania for the monsterific to the test. The result? A spirited and thoroughly Christian defense of Halloween and all things spooky. The Magic 8-Ball test, a Christian defense of Halloween and all things spooky, is available on Lulu.com.
Alright, well, except for Legion of Three Worlds, which appears to be 3 months behind the rest of the production schedule, Final Crisis over at DC Comics is over and done with, and I am beyond grateful to not have to spend, you know, $8 to $12 a month on a story that was at best confusing and at worst intentionally so. I say at worst intentionally so because Grant Morrison has made plain in several interviews that the intentionally confusing, or that the confusing structure of the story was done on purpose. For my mind, a construction like this would not, should not, have made it past the editorial process. Perhaps this was a good exercise in literary device. Perhaps this was a good exercise in literary storytelling. Perhaps it was a good example of a number of things, but what it was not was good comic book reading. For all of Grant Morrison's literary skill and, well, I was going to say familiarity with DC lore, but it's not really, he doesn't really seem to have a great familiarity with DC. He's familiar only, or he draws only upon the books in his own personal collection, which leaves out a much broader scope of material. The result is that Final Crisis, instead of being a story about the fall of the gods and the rise of a new pantheon, rather became an exercise in meta storytelling, which is storytelling, you know, telling a story about the telling of stories, about literary device, and about technical aspects of the form, which really should only work in the background. Now, Morrison has a history of this kind of thing, especially with The Invisibles, an indie book that he did a while back, and more recently with Seven Soldiers of Victory, many elements of which appeared in Final Crisis. I was hoping, though, with as broad of a brush as they gave him, with as big of an impact as this event is supposed to have over at the DC Universe, that his editorial staff would have put a tighter rein on this, and kind of sharpen his focus a bit. For as valid as that may be, the primary consideration when telling a comic book story, when telling any kind of story, is that it should be understood by the largest number of people possible while still maintaining your literary vision. And I think Morrison just really kind of sacrificed the element of clarity entirely to pursue his vision of what this story should have been. And I'm not going to go into the details, partly because I don't really want to take the time. This is 16 plus issues worth of material, not all of it by Morrison, and much of it very, very confusing. For a better treatment, for a more in-depth treatment, shall I say, go listen to Professor Murdo over at Comic Geek Speak. He does a fantastic job, which I'm not going to reprint here. Instead, I am simply going to put Final Crisis behind me, as hard as that may be, and move forward. And unfortunately for them, DC Comics has made this really, really easy for me to do. How have they done this, you might ask? Well, of the books that I have been buying, of the material in my pull and hold file, much of it's been canceled. I had allotted 3 comic book slots to Final Crisis, allowing for Revelations for the main story arc and for Legion of Three Worlds, and then just kind of buying the one shots and the short shots, like Superman Beyond, as I could get away with it. But Legion of Superheroes, which was this new incarnation, began a little over 4 years ago, and has been very, very good. Mark Waid started off the story arc and continued that for a while, but they have closed it out with work by Jim Shooter, who, curiously enough, did not stick around for the final issue. Now, this would have been good news for the Legion, as Shooter did a marvelous stint on Legion of Superheroes in the late 70s, and I believe in the early 80s. Shucks, now that I've said that on record, I'm going to be wrong. But he participated in the Valiant label revival of the Gold Key books, such as Magnus the Robot Fighter and Solar, Man of the Atom. But for some reason, I don't know if Shooter is just off his game or phoning it in or if his heart wasn't in it or what was going on, but the story that he started in issue 37 and didn't even wrap up until 50, he started this big storyline. It just took the Legion in a direction that I thought very, very odd and very, very inconsistent with Wade's vision of the team from the first issue. Now, you know, different creators, different whatever. But again, I attribute this not to to creator fault, but to editorial failing. In, you know, attempts to keep the characters consistent. The theme of this incarnation of the Legion has been teenage rebellion from day one, and in Shooter's magazine, it's the Legion is less teenage rebels and far more adult leaders. And it just seemed really, really odd. And while the final issue wasn't even wrapped up by Shooter, it was handled by, oh shucks, now I'm going to have to look this up. The final story arc was closed out by Justin Time, a man whom I'm not familiar with, in a manner worthy of the Miracle Machine that was introduced in the 70s and used by Morrison in the Final Crisis. So, while I am sad to see the Legion of Superheroes come to a conclusion with issue 50, I am also quite relieved to see Legion of Superheroes come to a conclusion with issue 50. And I am not at all certain that I will be picking up a second or third or a, shall we call it, another incarnation of the Legion after Legion of Three Worlds closes out. Which leads me on, and which is sad because I love Legion of Superheroes. Oh well. C'est la vie, c'est l'amour. Which leads me on into the Batman books. Now, I subscribe to four of the Batman books, Robin, Nightwing, Batman, and Detective. And again, Morrison closed out the story of the Dark Knight, the Caped, well, not the Caped Crusader. We'll stick to calling him the Dark Knight. He closed out the story of the Dark Knight and provided me, not incidentally, with a fantastic jumping-off point. The story of Batman, as far as I'm concerned, has reached a point where I am content to let it be. And these closeout issues of Detective and Batman with the stories by Neil Gaiman, I think, sum it up the best. In fact, let me call up this latest issue of Batman, which is Batman 686 with Neil Gaiman, and he tells a story worthy of his Sandman days, as it's got a very dreamlike quality to it. And again, this is a story heavy into literary device, so I'm going to have to I'm just going to have to wait and see where it goes, because in this issue, two stories are presented which are intentionally at odds with each other. They are treating Batman as myth, which I appreciate. I have long considered that superheroes are to be treated as mythological creatures, you know, mythological stories, mythological elements, rather than the popular thing nowadays is to treat them as real people, to treat your characters as real people. Shucks, now that I am looking for this scene, I cannot seem to find it. One moment. Aha, here we are. Jim Gordon is wheeling his daughter Barbara into the location of Batman's wake, and he is telling her, he says, "I guess I always knew that this was how it was going to end, that we didn't have him forever, that one day someone would say, "Hey, Jim, whatever happened to the Cape Crusader?" I'd tell them pretty much what you'd expect. He's dead. And this is really good, because Batman is, more than anything else, he is a man, and men die. Stories come to an end. And I have a wealth of back issues to collect, so, you know, his stories are not necessarily coming to an end for me. But as far as the monthly subscription, when the story arc is done and Battle for the Cowl begins, I am jumping off and will not be purchasing any of the Batman books anymore. And DC has made this very convenient for me to do by intentionally closing out both Nightwing story arc, Robin story arc, the Batman story arcs, closing all these things out and canceling the books. So this is a perfect opportunity for me. I am not at all unhappy with the way that those things resolved, because I think both Nightwing and Robin were handled in a manner befitting their legendary status. They didn't try to do anything dramatic with them. They didn't kill them. They didn't change them. They didn't do anything with it other than progress the character to their next stage of life. So as Nightwing closes out, Dick Grayson is going through an empty Batcave and remembering his life with Bruce and how he got here, and he is getting ready to step into Batman's boots to fulfill the role that Batman has set for him that he has left behind. And this is a really great senior coming of age story, as the young man, and we've seen Dick Grayson go from the cocksure teenager to a confident young man. Now this young man, who is in his mid-20s, possibly late 20s or early 30s, these things are always somewhat nebulous in comic books, but he is getting ready to, instead of assuming the role of adult son to a father, he is getting ready to step into the role of peer to his father. And I think this is just fantastic. And over in Robin, we've seen something very similar happen. A character who started in the books at age 13 or 14 is now 17, possibly 18, depending on who you ask. And he is getting ready to step out of the role of the teenager and into the role of a young adult, with the responsibilities that go with that. And I think both of those transitions were handled beautifully, just as they should be, without all the hype and dramatic promises that have accompanied Batman RIP and Final Crisis and a whole bunch of other things. I would have been content if... I don't know what I would have been content with Batman, but possibly with a bit less fanfare. Now, of the that's five books of my monthlies dropping off of my chart, plus the three slots I had allocated for Final Crisis, which is, you know, that's huge. You know, that's $25-$30 that DC is not going to be getting out of my pocket every month. That doesn't mean I'm not going to be following these stories, as I like the Batman character and the Batman clan of characters. But what I am going to be doing is what I have done with the Green Lantern material after the departure of Kyle Rayner from the title role, and that is simply buying the trade paperbacks as they collect story arcs and as story arcs demand my attention. So, while I will not be following, be purchasing Battle for the Cowl as it progresses, I am likely to investigate the trade paperback. Now, books that I intend to continue buying includes Supergirl, Cosmic Adventures in the Eighth Grade. Now, don't confuse this with the regular Supergirl title set in the regular DC universe. This is part of the Johnny DC line. And even though they canceled The Batman Strikes and Justice League Unlimited and Teen Titans Go and Legion of Superheroes in the 31st century to replace them with such infantile fare as the Super Friends and the Magic of Shazam, or Billy Batson and the Magic of Shazam, or whatever silly thing that is. Supergirl is light and funny, and I am enjoying it quite a bit. It doesn't hurt my feelings at all that it's a 6-issue limited series, and I can have a story that I find tremendously entertaining for what it is, light comic book fare, and I can read it with my children, and my daughter is learning to love the same books I do. I am also continuing to get Tiny Titans, which is another Johnny DC line, and it is, again, it is a comic strip style of funny material. It's very lighthearted, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. Speaking of kid books and trade paperbacks, the new Mini Marvels is out. The first trade was Rock, Paper, Scissors, and the second one, Crumb. I don't remember what it is. But there's a second one out now, and I'm looking forward to picking that up as I can lay my hands on it. Because it is light fare, it is self-contained, and it is fun. It is what made me want to... It's the kind of fun storytelling that makes me want to share comic books with my kids. Okay, I am continuing with Trinity for the duration of the story arc. This has taken a really, really odd turn. It does not relate to Final Crisis or the current events in the DC at all. Everything is happening in an alternate timeline right now. And Busiek and Bagley and Nicieza are some of my favorite creative teams. And while I'm not certain where this is going or what they are doing with it, and the forums are abuzz with the complaints about the absence of Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman from the title roles of the book, I don't have any such complaints. I'm enjoying the story immensely, and I look forward to continuing to enjoy this story, which is not insignificant because Trinity, being a weekly book, takes up 4 of my monthly comic book slots, and that's not nothing. Finally, we're going to wrap it out with the book I'm probably enjoying the most, and that is Booster Gold. Dan Jurgens is writing it right now, following a short story arc by Chuck Dixon. And then, of course, following Jeff Johns in the first 12 issues or so of the book. And Booster Gold, I never paid Booster much attention until the events of 52. And that story also written predominantly by the team of Dan Jurgens and Jeff Johns. This book is what superhero stories ought to be. Booster Gold is a very engaging character for me. He's a very human character for me. And the stories, of course, deal with time travel, which leads into a whole world worth of fun. I am looking forward to Dan Jurgens' run on this book. He's got a proven track record. He did some of my favorite run on Superboy, the first 25 issues of so of the new Superboy. Plus, he's got chops on Superman and a whole bunch of Jack Kirby related titles. And even though Booster Gold is not a Jack Kirby character, the Kirby style adventure is here, and the Jurgens wit and cohesive storytelling, style is right here. Plus, the humanity that he brings to his characters is not insignificant at all. Booster Gold, one of the best things going right now. Don't wait for the trades on this. Run out and buy it. All right, well, I am pushing 40 minutes, which is about twice as long as I would like to run. But I've been talking about comic books, which is about twice as much fun as I usually have. So, here we go. Thanks for sticking with me for so long. I hope you get out and enjoy some of these books that I'm enjoying. And if you have recommendations, please feel free to email me at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com. Tell me what books that I should be reading and I'm missing out on, because I really, really need to know. And don't even bother mentioning Spider-Man and Captain America until Steve Rogers comes back and Mary Jane comes back. Because without those two, you don't got a book. And anyway, that's entirely off the subject. Let me know what you're reading. Let me know what I should be reading. And I keep wanting to close. I'm resisting closing out with one of Stan Lee's taglines: "Excelsior," or "Make Mine Marvel," or one of the others. Because I've not been talking about Marvel. I've been talking about DC. But what you gonna do, right?
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com. Voicemail at 206-222-2478. Thanks to K7.net.